So Bob, you flew so many different airplanes, including Navy. How did you wind up getting an exchange as a naval aviator?
Well, it was a Department of Defense pilot exchange program, purpose of which to seek commonality and understand the missions of our sister services, and being able to report on things where more commonality, such as ground power units and other kinds of things, which were unique to certain services, and make those more important. And also tactics, operations, communications, all that sort of stuff. So that was the essence of the Department of Defense Pilot Exchange. Top Gun School at Navy Miramar. And so I took several weeks of training there, carequalled on the USS Coral Sea with 5 day and 5 night. A little story in between there, we got our 5 day traps done. We had supper and a wardroom mess, and then we had the briefing by the operations officer for our 5 night qualification. There were 7 of us. Two commanders who had fighter squadron units waiting for them to report in as skippers, one lieutenant commander, one Navy captain, and a couple of junior officers and me. And so the operations officer said, okay, night carrier operations are exactly like daytime carrier operations, except it's dark as hell and you can't see anything. That was the briefing. And he said, the order of night carrier will be the two and the two senior student commander is going to be squadron commanders, the lieutenant commander, the lieutenant, the junior officers. Air Force, you're going to be dead last because we want to make sure it's very dark when you take your...
If I could just interject, I just can't help this, but as a Navy guy, it does my heart proud to hear an Air Force general talk so lovingly about carrier life. Thank you for
that. Well, Navy would often, or, you know, the unwashed might say, well, how was it landing on a carrier? What does an Air Force guy say? It's a piece of cake, of course.
Sure, sure.
But
well,
we were very well. It was an honor and a privilege. Had two combat tours on Yankee Station. Unfortunately, we lost some people, two skippers in a span of 3 weeks, two JOs, my wingmen on a night carrier landing, but it was an honor and a privilege to fly with the United States.
What was the first time piece of cake landing on the boat? What was it like the first time you looked down at the carrier and knew that you didn't have an instructor in the airplane with you and you were going to land on that little thing?
Well, it was, awesome. And here's the ship going this way, and, you know, the angle deck is 11 degrees off the direction that the ship is going. So you're always correcting. You always go across the wake, and you're correcting to go in to land here 11 degrees off while the ship is moving like this. But you have directions from the Fresnel lands and the landing signal officer, the LSO paddles, they call them, and so on. So
he's
the procedures were very clear. You follow the procedures. you do what you're supposed to do. You factor that in with your Air Force training, and everything goes well. And by the way, by the time I went on exchange, I had about 3,000 hours of flying time. So that was an advantage. I mean, I'd been a fighter pilot for quite a while and flown in different environments, including the RCAF tour, NATO.
Right.
And, yeah.
Mike, as he explains this, as an Air Force guy explaining the Navy procedures, you know, you're here, are you operations officer, OPSO on a carrier, and so you've got, what did I say, 555 traps? My gosh. But what is that? How do you describe that experience, and how is it different from what Air Force guys do landing on runways?
Well, as a Navy captain to an Air Force general, you got it exactly right, sir. Nice job. And he did. It's exactly the right experience. So it's an incredible thing to experience day and night, and over time you get a little more comfortable with it. You know, you don't realize it when you're doing it, but we all live at certain points on the stress performance curve where stress increases to some maximum point, your performance falls off. So you want to stay near the top or maybe the left side of that curve. And over time, I think we get more and more comfortable with day landings. It actually becomes fun. We actually want to go out and do more of it. Bag traps, we call it. Nobody ever asks to get extra landings at night. You know, that's usually it's a lot less moving parts. It's a straight in approach on needles, but it's a deprivation of sensory input, which I think is the stressor.
At night,
yeah. All you can see is the two-dimensional lineup for left and right and glide slope for up and down. You really can't see the ship at all. It's dark. So you see the lineup and you see the vertical, but you don't have any perception of depth to the carrier. And at some point, you stop looking at your instruments and you just focus visually on the meatball and lineup. And it's not till the last about 4 or 5 seconds where the low light deck lights start to become visible, and you see the island go by, and you catch a wire. So, it's
Alan, how jealous are you that you never got to do that?
I would love to have had the opportunity. I'd like to kind of interject, though. You know, here we are, 80 years, you know, and it is such a wonderful trader, something we hadn't talked about. In my experience, flying the T-6. I was, you know, in my early 20s, and my dad had bought the S&J that I flew in the air shows for years. Had bought it, and he bought the T6 in 73, and then we ended up with a Mustang in 79. And I started flying the T6 in the early 80s, and since my dad had started flying the Mustang, the T6 kind of sat in the back of the hangar and started collecting dust, and we had a steerman at that time. I started flying it. I'd been flying a Cub, and I said, sure would like to fly that T6 a little bit. And he goes, well, you know how to start it? And I said, well, I think I can figure it out. He handed me the book, said, read the book, go fly the thing. And that was my checkout in the T6. I just read the book, and we had a 2,500-foot grass strip down the country, and I just got in and started flying it. And wow. So anyway, over about a year and a half, 2 years, I ended up with about 35 hours at that time in the T6. And I kind of said the same thing about flying a Mustang. And he goes, well, you got a book? And he said, read the book and go fly it. And anyway, so I got in this Mustang. And like I said, I had like 35 hours in the T6. And went out there and did everything the manual said to do, and went out and flew the airplane. And I got a big surprise when I ran it down the runway the first time at about 40 inches. And I didn't get the tail up. I just wanted to make sure I could keep it straight down the runway, and everything seemed pretty good. So I went taxi back, and I had a little bit of a wind from the left, which... that bit me in a few seconds later. That bit me, but I rolled the canopy forward. And I said, all right, I went to about 40 inches and got going down the runway. So I went in and shoved it up to about 55. And not being able to see that well over the nose, I popped the tail up. Of course, I had that left wind and plus the gyroscopic precession. I popped the tail up. That thing made a left turn. And I'm sitting there pushing all I can do on the right rudder, and I'm headed toward the edge of the runway. And anyway, by the time I got to the edge of the runway, I got off the ground.
She's here.
And I was like, phew, you idiot. What have you done this time? And anyway, so I took off and flew the airplane, did some air work, did some stalls and stuff. And I thought, well, since I got it in the air, I don't know how it's going to be on landing. And so I went and buzzed everybody I knew, because I said, this, at least I got to fly it one time. And I came back in, entered the pattern, and, you know, did everything the book said. Came in to land, flared, and it just kissed on just as such a sweet. And when I got on the ground and rolled out, the back of my mind, I was going, you know, that was so familiar, because I'd flown the T-6 first. And it did what it's supposed to do. The T-6 is such a great trainer to get you ready for high-performance tail-dragger fighters. It did what it's supposed to do.
Alex, compare from your experience flying T-6 to, say, the P-51 or other propeller-driven aircraft.
Well, I think Al is absolutely right. The T-6 prepares you for that 51. And flying a 51 is kind of like having a convertible and a 300-horsepower engine and driving down the interstate at 140 miles an hour. That's what it's like. You couldn't want anything better.
Right. Is it more difficult or easier to fly than the T-6?
It's different. I don't think it's either easier or harder. It's just different. It's a little more powerful. You got more rudder problems because of the big engine and that, but it's a little easier on landing, I think, than a T-6 is. So 6 to 1.5 does the other two.
Bob, what about you? Compare the 6 to other aircraft you flew.
Well, I think as the Brits and the Canucks named it the Harvard, it prepares you for future aviation. And it does so in one heck of a great way because of the particular characteristics of flying the T-6. And you have to pay attention to what you're doing all the time because of some of these little tricky situations that evolve from nowhere, right? And you have to be prepared.
After I got back from Korea flying the T-6 over there, they sent me to basic instructor school in the T-28. Tricycle gear, I mean, it was like nothing, just sitting there.
Yeah.
Compared to the T-6 or the 51, T-28 was a piece of cake. As well, like those carrier landings, piece of cake. Right?
Roger. I wanted to go to the Mustang so bad.